I would like to call to order the regular monthly meeting of the respiratory care examiners at 9:12 on October 18, 2018. Forgive my hoarse voice, that's what you're going to hear a little bit today. We will start with, as a reminder, this is a professional board setting. Board members, make sure you turn your microphones on. People in the audience, make sure, because we do have internet in here, that you've silenced your phones, please. And keep in mind that we're a professional setting, so when you're sitting up here, we ask that you not speak over us, and we will not speak over you as well. We're going to start with introductions. My name is Tracy Kagan, and I'm chair of the board.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
Michelle O'Hare-Schattenberg, board member.
Jack Confer, executive director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg, attorney for the board.
Charlotte Muhammad, assistant.
Kathy Stone, board staff.
Please make sure if you are here for CEU that you signed in on the blue sheet and you have to stay here for the remainder of the meeting, and we will call your name out before you leave at the very end of the meeting. You're going to see me skip around a little bit on the agenda because we have some things that are timed, but we will start with approval of the consent agenda, which are items A, up to and including 2H.
I move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for approval of consent. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I was going to mention that I changed the numbering on the agenda to match what we have on the onboard system, so that it's synonymous now. We're not going to be dealing with A11 and that sort of thing, so that's why you saw that change.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. 9:14, I can't quite start yet, huh? So should I go to... Okay, so the board is going to call the case. We are looking at 3C, consideration and action. Sorry. 3B, consideration and action on formal complaint hearings. And the board will be calling the case of Jared Leeson. Case 2018-RCE-0015, and that is timed for 9:15, so we're going to wait just a moment before we get started with that one.
We have probably 30 seconds now.
Madam Chair, members of the board, just a quick introduction. On behalf of independent counsel today, Michael Rain is here to give counsel to the board.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. It is now 9:15 a.m. on October 18th, 2018, and this is the time set for the formal hearing before the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners in case number 2018-RCE-0015. We have nobody here. I'm Tracy Kagan. I'm chair of the board. Do we need to introduce again? Yeah. Okay, so we're going to do introductions, please.
Just board members.
Okay.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
Michelle O'Hare-Schattenberg, board member.
This is the administrative hearing before the board, and we will use the following procedures. All persons who speak must speak loudly and clearly so their statements can be recorded, and only one person may speak at a time. To begin the hearing, each side may make a brief opening statement. The state will call its witness first and may offer documents as evidence. The chair will rule on admissibility of evidence, and the licensee may then cross-examine each witness, and the state may ask additional questions. Board members may then ask questions of the witness, and if board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. After the state presents all its witnesses, licensee will present his or her witness and may offer documents as evidence. Licensee may testify as a witness and may call other witnesses. The state may cross-examine each witness, and licensee may ask additional questions of the witness. Board members may then ask the witness questions. If board members question a witness, parties may ask additional questions. Each party may make a closing statement. After closing statements, the board will deliberate and make a decision. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Madam Chair. Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg representing the state. In your materials, you'll find a motion to deem the allegations admitted. The state board has the statutory authority to impose discipline pursuant to the allegations stated in the original complaint notice of hearing. if the licensee fails to respond to the complaint within 30 days of being properly served. ARS 3235-53K provides that a licensee shall respond in writing to the board within 30 days after the notice is served as prescribed in subsection J. The board may then consider a licensee's failure to respond within this time frame as an admission by default to the allegation stated within that complaint. The board may then take disciplinary action allowed by this chapter without conducting a hearing. In this case, board staff mailed a copy of the complaint and notice of hearing to respondent on September 1st, 2018 via U.S. Postal Service certified mail with return receipt requested and regular mail to respondent's address of record with the board. The staff also sent this notice by electronic mail to respondent's most current electronic mail address on August 30th, 2018. The most recent contact with licensee was approximately through email on June 14th of 2018. Therefore, service of process was completed on September 1st, 2018, pursuant to 3235-53J. The certified mailing was claimed by respondent on September 12th, 2018. The documents sent by regular mail to respondent's address of record have never been returned to the board as undeliverable, and documents regarding this investigation that were previously sent to respondent by U.S. mail or by email have never been returned as undeliverable. In your material, you'll also find attachments that show this. Respondent was properly served and had actual notice of the formal hearing today. Staff had not only sent the notice by certified and regular mail, but went beyond reasonable measures by sending the notice by email as well. As of October 5th, 2018, respondent has failed to respond to the complaint within the 30-day time frame as required by ARS 3235-53K. Therefore, the state respectfully requests that the parties in jurisdiction, factual allegations, and alleged violations stated within the complaint notice of hearing be deemed admitted and the board take disciplinary action without conducting a hearing today.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move that we grant the state's motion to deem.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion on that? All in favor of granting the state's motion to deem, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. That motion passes. Is there a motion to adopt findings of fact?
I believe we just did. And a motion to deem?
Well, in granting the motion to deem, you have, but you need to still craft an order so you can go through the process of adopting the parties in jurisdiction.
All right. All right, so, Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the parties in jurisdictional statement and the factual allegations as stated in the notice of hearing complaint as findings of fact.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and second. Do we have any further discussion on that? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
All right, and then, Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the alleged violation statement of alleged violations as stated in the notice of hearing and complaint as conclusions of law.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes. Okay. We're at a discipline stage. If we feel there's discipline, you can.
I'm going to make a motion for revocation of licensure.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second for revocation. Do we have any discussion? We will do this in a roll call vote. Kathy, we'll start with you.
Catherine Deere, aye.
Helen Crawford, aye.
Michael Butler, aye.
Michelle Hare-Schattenberg, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. And that motion passes. Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Do you have any script for the concluding remarks?
Any what? I'm sorry.
Some concluding remarks. If we have a script, it might be that, but I have some here. I don't think so.
I don't think so,
no. We'll wrap it up neatly.
This concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced in a written order and served to the parties. The parties will further appeal. The parties will have further appeal rights to the board's order. We'll explain. I don't know what that meant.
Well, that didn't work as well.
That did not work as planned. But thank you for
that was adequate. What you did read was adequate.
Thank you. All right, we are going to jump down to 3D, consideration and action on informal interviews. And the board will call the case of Katarina Avery, 2018-RCE-0033. Yes, come on up to the table. Is that microphone on, Kathy?
Yes, it's on.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for being here. Raise your right hand, please. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, RCP Avery was terminated from her employment at Banner Thunderbird for inaccurately recording dates and times that she had, for which she stated she completed her continuing education classes. The board received a mandatory report from Banner Thunderbird on July 10, 2018, stating that RCP Avery had been terminated from her employment at Banner Thunderbird Medical Center. RCP Avery was terminated for providing inaccurate time records while completing continuing education. The director stated that the documentation would have resulted in an extra 11 hours being recorded on her time sheet. RCP Avery did respond to the allegations within the statutory time frame. She states that she did not intentionally misrepresent any time to her employer, that for the first time she took classes outside of the Banner network, and those were the dates and times recorded in the employee time book. RCP Avery stated that I had learned from my mistakes. I plan to have less occurrences of miscommunication by practicing better record-keeping skill, and I plan only to take classes by the company for a better track record. RCP Avery has accepted the invite and is here to respond to the board's questions.
Okay, thank you. Thank you again for being here. He gave us a summary, but you will have the opportunity to tell us anything else you might want us to hear about this. And then after that, the board will likely have some questions for you.
Okay.
Board, do you have anything to say?
Other than, you know, again, it was unintentional. And I wouldn't be here today, as I was told, if I was still planning on going into corrective action. I wouldn't be here. I think that it could have went differently if I was approached and had fixed the time card, but I wasn't. It was automatically sent to HR, but I understand the mistakes that I made. Board members, your questions?
I do. So walk me through how many hours was you took a BLS and ACLS course?
Yeah, and PALS.
So three classes.
Yeah.
Walk me through how many hours each one of those was, or was it combined?
The ACLS and BLS were combined, but I did write them separate. I just wrote the average time like the class was. So they were done on three separate days, and the third day was the day of signing. The dates that I recorded were the dates on the actual cards that I received, but they told me that those weren't accurate. So when I approached the situation and told them that I could have given, you know, accurate dates, they didn't want.
So let me, just for clarity purposes, the card that you were issued by your instructor
mm-hmm.
had the incorrect dates and
yes.
were not the factual dates that you actually took the course.
Yes.
That's correct?
Yes.
At any point did you, so I guess my question would be, why did you document different dates on the time card and not the actual dates that you attended?
Because I just copied the dates that were on my card, my provided card.
But they weren't the dates that you actually attended class?
No.
Okay. You said it was three separate days. 2 days were instruction. 1 day was just signing the card?
Yes.
Okay. Did you sign in on a sign-in sheet at these classes?
No.
There was no sign-in sheet provided to you by the instructor?
There was a sign-in sheet, but he didn't give us any copies of it. And that apparently was a roster for the American Heart Association, which the roster had something different than what actually happened. So the roster stated that we were at a facility, not at, you know, we met up as a group, it was three of us, met up as a group at the Starbucks location and did the class, and we went through and we had PowerPoint screening. The roster said that we were at a facility And we went through the classes and spent so many hours there, and the ratio for mannequins was completely different than anything that I stated, and I told them the truth. Like, we were at...
You told who?
The HR coordinator, that, you know, we did not go to a facility, we were at a shuttle. So anything on his part that he was supposed to explain to us that we weren't supposed to be there should have been said, because I was unaware.
Did you reach out to your instructor to seek clarification on those
documents? Yes, and he just said, I was wrong, and I'm going to be reprimanded for this. I apologize. That's all I was told.
Do you have anything in writing from that instructor?
No, he just called me.
I don't know.
Board members, anyone else have questions?
Is the instructor Narky?
No.
These other people that you said you took, that you were in a group with, were they from Banner Thunderbird as well?
No. They were from different facilities.
Were they Arkies?
Yes.
Those cards are from, the ones we have are from long ago.
Yeah. Do you have your cards on you?
I did not bring them in since they were, I have them in, but I don't have them on the person.
Are they considered not valid cards now?
No, they're valid.
Even though they're inaccurate.
I think if I'm reading this correctly, she was terminated because she overstated the amount of time that she was at the class. Because the complaint that came in, or the statement from the, this is really light and I don't know how to make it bigger and darker. That it states that she would have overstated, I believe I read 11 hours.
Yeah, it's 11.
From June, and then she wrote down September or something like that, which I don't really quite know how you make that mistake. But at any rate, so I'm assuming that's the issue.
Yeah.
Not whether or not you were at a facility or at a Starbucks. That doesn't mitigate anything, quite frankly. It's the fact that you lied to your employer as to the amount of time that you spent at a class. That's the issue as I see it.
So walk me through that.
So as I stated before, I wrote my BLS class separately in the time book, not to receive the time. I just wrote it as I took the class, like the estimated amount of time that a BLS usually takes. All I did was I wrote ACLS, BLS, PALS. And that one, I put the average amount of time is usually 8 hours for each class. You're there from 8 to maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, usually. So that's where the mistake came in, and this is what I explained to them. It wasn't to receive compensation, which I did not receive any compensation for the excess of hours. All I did was just write the classes down.
Were those the actual hours that you attended that class?
The BLS, no. But the ACLS and the PALS, yes. So if I were to write the BLS with the ACLS as I was taking the class together, then this wouldn't be happening. But since I wrote them separately, it made me go into excess the amount of hours.
So you never signed in or clocked in? So tell me what this book is for the... What's the purpose of writing down your times in this book?
This time, it says a timekeeping book. So okay. This is the book that we have at work, and it's a time record-keeping book. So you put in, and I don't use that book. You do everything online.
Right.
So the only reason that I wrote in this book was to write these classes down. So it's a time record-keeping book. So it's verified and approved by someone. So as I explained, when the situation occurred, my times that I wrote down were checked and they were not approved, so I'm not understanding why I'm being recommended, you could have just asked, hey, what is going on here, and can you fix it? Like, this isn't adding up, which I would have totally accepted and explained why I did it, and I could have corrected it, but that opportunity was not given.
Well, the punch correction slip on page 248 that I'm looking at says that the date to be corrected was 6/22 for a BLS renewal course that you clocked in at 8 a.m. and you clocked out at 1700. I have never taken a BLS course that has lasted 8 hours. To me, that would, especially a BLS renewal, if I was your leader, I would question why I'm paying 8 hours for a BLS renewal course. So I understand the facility's concern. The ACLS, you clocked in at 10 a.m., clocked out at 4 p.m. So that in itself is not even 8 hours. So something's not adding up to me. And I see three different dates. I see 6/18, 6/27, and 6/20.
None of the dates match. So if you go to page 145, it's the same thing. There's 6/18, 6/22, and 6/23 that
right.
She says that it says she provided. And also the times don't match. It says in at 8 a.m., out at 1700. And then it has it listed, the total amount of time is 8 hours, which still doesn't make sense. And then if you look at the paragraph there with the notes provided by Safety On-Site, it has completely different dates and times as well.
So yeah, she explained the dates.
But they don't match the punch either.
But if the time book that she wrote her, if her class is down to, is not official, enter your time to get paid, and somebody denies the entries in the book, how did you get paid for those?
I didn't.
She didn't get paid.
I didn't get paid for it. She went, what I was told is she went to the roster of the American Heart Association and paid me for the time stated in that roster. I never received that roster. I don't know what dates or times is on there. I don't know what's on that roster.
But she got a copy of the roster, verified that you took the classes and the hours that you did, and then she entered a time correction into your Chronos.
Yes.
For your pay.
Yes.
And this time book has nothing to do with... Okay. So that this roster doesn't match what you entered in the time book, obviously.
Regardless of what's on the roster, I'm just thinking if this was me taking this renewal class, I'm going to write down on the time book the dates that I know I was there, regardless of what's on my card or what's on my sign-in sheet.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I was there at this time and I left at this time. So I can understand part of the confusion. What I don't understand is what appears to be deception, and that I'm not going to spend 8 hours in a BLS renewal class.
Right. No, me either. As an instructor, it doesn't take 8 hours.
No.
Not for renewals, 4 hours max.
So apparently this book, if I'm understanding correctly, is something that you come back and enter manually if you are off-site and you're not able to badge yourself in and out of the facility. I mean, am I understanding that correctly?
You write in the book, and the person that handles time cards looks at it and...
Makes the entries.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's changed, but with the Chrono system, it's a live stamp, so if you forget to punch in, you can put it in the book, and then they'll confirm that you showed up for your shift and manually put it in there, right? Okay, so...
Or go in and do it electronically, as you
stated. Right. I'll tell you, from having to do some of these things myself with my license too, I am deathly afraid of something being incorrect, and I keep records like crazy. I have stuff on my phone when I'm there, what date it is, it's on my phone prior to, on my calendar prior to, when I showed up, when the class started, when our breaks are, Plus, you know, it's always on the certificate of attendance that you get, too, how many hours. At least the state bar requires that you that they break down the hours. And plus, I have three redundant records. I have two electronic calendars and a paper calendar. I mean, I'm so anal about that because you can be audited. And I don't want any question. And if you value what it is that you're doing and being able to continue to work or not be all before the licensing agency because you've kept crappy records, you have to be responsible enough to be accurate about it. And she stated she guessed, or it's usually this amount of time. It's just that's just not acceptable to me.
So, Michelle, if you had attended a class or conference, mm-hmm. as you stated, and you got a certificate that had different dates, mm-hmm. but the dates you physically attended,
mm-hmm. I'd be calling somebody.
I'd be calling somebody and saying, you need to correct uh-huh. this.
Yeah, I'd be calling the bar, or I'd be calling the instructors or whatever kind of a class it was to say, hey, listen, this is not right, and I would hope I would catch it before I even left. Because we get our certificates right away. Before we leave, you turn in one thing and you get your certificate in exchange for that. You turn in your evaluation and get your certificate. So.
And it sounds like she did that. She called the instructor mm-hmm. and the instructor told her, you're going to get me in trouble.
Right. I mean.
But I think the concern here is that you falsified your paper.
Correct. Or you took a stab at it and thought, well, I'll just, you know, it's usually 8 hours, so I'll put 8 hours down. That's not acceptable to me.
I understand the confusion. Mm-hmm. I agree with Michelle. I think that there is a personal responsibility that you have as an
right.
individual. I think that the facility took action that they feel is appropriate for disciplinary action mm-hmm. based on the actions that RCP Avery took. I would be comfortable with a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
Is that a motion?
I'll make that a motion.
Concerned that?
My concern would be accurate record keeping or time served.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second for a letter of concern. Any other discussion? All in favor of letter of concern say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. That motion passes.
So the RCP, a letter of concern is a non-disciplinary action. It's like an advisory letter that's basically going to send out to you within the next week to 10 days. And it's basically going to say when you're performing the professional respiratory care, you have to be accurate in getting education records and paper records. Okay? Thank you for coming down again. Appreciate your time.
You are welcome to stay.
You're welcome to stay, but you're also free to leave. Either way.
We'll take care of
it. Thank you.
Okay, we will continue in 3D, and the board will call the case of James Shaw, 2018-RCE-0036. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here with us. If you could raise your right hand. To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, RCP Shaw was involved with the care of a patient that expired on July 12, 2018. The board received notification of the issue by electronic complaint submission. That complaint submission was anonymous, but it had been represented as a self-report from RCP. The complaint alleges inadequate patient care. The board received an online complaint on July 15, 2018. The complaint states, on July 12th at approximately 19:30, the RCP listed above discovered his patient on the ground and unresponsive. Instead of staying with the patient and starting depressions, trying to put the trach back in and calling for help, he then left the room and approached me as I walked his way. He stated, the patient's dead. I said, what? he stated again, the patient's dead. As I enter the room, I find the patient on the ground, lying in a pool of blood. Trach was out, nowhere in sight. Patient was in full code. Check for pulse, and the nurse started compressions. The RCP above said to start bagging patient and cover the stomach with a 4x4. The method obviously wasn't working, so I told him to go get a trach. I think that's square. I can't. A trach so we can reestablish an airway. He comes back with a number 4 cuffless trach. The patient has, was previously on an 8 lower locked cuff. So I ran to get a number 6 cuff trach. We secure the trach and resume our bagging from there. 911 is called, and they took over. Time of death was 20:07. The RCP seems to lack basic skills in problem-solving and patient care. RCP Shaw did respond to the complaint within the appropriate statutory time frame. He stated in his response that on July 12, 2018, night at Montecito Post-Acute Care in Mesa, a patient was found on the floor by the nurse in her room in a pool of blood. The medical examiner report stated the patient expired of natural causes. The patient's nurse called for help. As the team, me, 3 other RTs, and 3 nurses entered the patient room, the shock of all the blood on the floor causes everyone to be cautious for their own safety. I instructed one of the RTs to get the AMBU bag and start bagging the patient, and nurses started CPR. I moved myself from a room to get a crash cart. I returned with the crash cart, provided the patient airway by reinserting a new trach. Trach asked me to, and the patient's trachea secured. Tracheostomy tube, suction patient airway with Danielle continuing to bag patients. Successful CPR was performed. When both paramedics and EMTs entered the room, the transition from staff performing CPR to the paramedics and EMTs performing CPR went very smoothly until I overheard another RT attempting to stop the resuscitation by stating the patient is a DNR. Do not resuscitate. This was inaccurate and potentially dangerous information being given to the rescuers. I immediately correct the situation by telling the RT and the rescuers that the patient is in full code. CPR was never stopped, but her comments caused a brief confusion. My correction of this RT to the patient's code status caused her some embarrassment. It's this embarrassment that fueled her to contact the board to make accusations and allegations that are extremely misleading and false. Every member of the team performing CPR did outstanding work that night. This has been reported to the director of nursing, who received all documents surrounding the code. RCP Shaw does have a history with the board as far as there's one non-disciplinary order on file. And I think that was for continuing education. We don't have anything else in his record. And he has been licensed with us since 1996. License is currently set to expire May 24th, 2020. And there's no record in PACER as far as anything else. I don't have anything for you unless you have questions.
Okay, thank you. So you will have the opportunity, as you could hear, the stories are very different renditions of what happened. So we're going to give you a moment to tell us what you want to tell us, and then the board will likely have some questions for you.
Yeah, basically the repeat what was said was the patient was found down by the person's nurse. And not only myself, but 3 other RTs were in the patient's room. I kind of took the lead a little bit to get things rolling because it was a shock with all the blood being there on the floor. But to make a long story short, everyone did what they were supposed to do. Area was established. I left the room to get a code, to get their code card, and then make sure 911 was called because it's an acute care facility. We don't have overhead medical system, so everything was done by phone and walkie-talkies. Came back into the room, intubated the patient, basically put the tech back into the patient myself, secured it, suctioned the patient's airway, it was patent. The patient was being bagged at the time paramedics and EMTs came. all the documentation from the nurses to the RTs, corroborated my story. There wasn't any deviation at all. Montesina, director of nurses, read through everyone's documentation. It was filed, and that was the end of the story. Until the board got wind of the complaint by the person I felt was the one that was embarrassed, and she brought it up to make an issue that wasn't an issue. No documentation anywhere supports what she says. And that's why we're sitting there basically approaching that embarrassing that they're doing, sir, and they're using the situation as a board to get back. There's no documentation that anything went wrong at that code.
I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
I have reviewed all 2,429 pages of patient records in our documents here. Question for Assistant Attorney General. I don't know what patient we're specifically referencing that code in. Do we need to go to executive session to get that information?
What's the initial of the patient?
I don't. Once the code was called, I went to the patient's room. I don't remember the patient's name. I just know the room number. And it happened like...
What's the room number?
16. 216.
I think so.
While he's looking up that, you and I had a conversation yesterday where I was trying to get some more information on some specific information. What's the status of that stuff with Director of Nursing?
Yeah, Director of Nursing, I went to her office last night. She had left, and they were giving flu shots out in her office.
Right.
This morning before I came to the board meeting, I waited for her to get there. She wasn't in her office. I actually took a picture of her office door being closed at 6:45 this morning. So, but you guys can call her. I guess she has all the documents. Anything you guys need, you guys can call the facility.
The unfortunate part, RCP Shaw, is I've had a lot of difficulty dealing with the entity to get documents from the first day I sent out the subpoena.
Okay.
So the unfortunate part is not helping you, not having documents here for us to review. So I don't know what else to do.
Right. Well, I actually gave you also first-hand because of contact as well that could support what happened. And what
I contacted everybody from their legal counsel down to the receptionist.
Okay.
I talked with Pearl. I talked with Carrie Iverson. I talked with everybody, and I still can't get my hands on everything that's surrounding this. So,
right.
Obviously,
I wish I could help you.
Yeah.
I can't go in the office. I wish I could help you. Because when that incident happened, it was basically shell. It wasn't anything that was a concern by staff. It was brought to my attention. Nothing prior to that incident.
It's just the appearance of not being able to get my hands on things. It's not helping right now.
Can I ask a process-related question? When there's a code at this facility, who typically responds?
It depends on the hall. They have three halls, and let's say there's halls A, B, and C. So if you're in hall A and your patient's in the hall...
What hall is 216 in?
That's hall C.
Okay, talk to me about hall C. Who responds in hall C?
The nurse that calls the code, the nurse had that patient. So the nurse went in the room first. She saw that patient. Being that I was the RT for that patient, that was the newly arrival patient, I went in there as well. And as I'm going in, the three other RTs, myself and three other RTs, are in that room. So at the time the patient was being assessed and starting CPR, there's about 8 to 9 people in there. 4 of them are RTs.
But who typically responds in a code is my question. So the nurse?
There is no code team. There is no there's no code team. There's no lead. There's no formal entity that deals with the code. There's actually 3 other floors. And there's a code call where if that's not the RT floor, we have to leave that area and go to the same. It's called the sand tan. There's different areas where there aren't any RTs. Wherever goes. Typically, what happened, I was my first code there at the facility, so it was my hall. I'm working in a hospital scenario, so if that's your patient room, you usually go to that code. So I went through the code to make sure things were being done correctly. Then I didn't see a crash cart. I didn't see a defibrillator. I didn't hear anyone call overhead for any assistance or make sure that the call was being sent out to EMTs. So I left the room to get the crash cart and make sure the code was being sent out to them.
Talk to me about 216. You just said 216 was a new arrival?
Yes. and my documentation, the patient got there that day, and evidently they had some kind of a cancerous tumor around the trachea area, to my knowledge. And from what I was told, when the patient fell, they were down, and basically that's how the patient expired.
This patient was meth dependent?
No. No. There are patients there that are trait that are not meth dependent.
Okay, so this patient was not, was plugged, was on an aerosol?
Clarosol.
Have you had an opportunity to assess this patient prior to the COVID?
I had a chance to do what we call the bedside report. Day shift and night shift, we'll go in the patient's room, make eye contact on the patient, make sure the patient's, you know, is stable, and I'm passing on the patient gets help until the next staff. Got a report from my coworkers, patient was fine, went back into the room, patient was on aerosol, did my assessment, airway, side trained, everything was done correctly. Left the room, after that, I guess the CNAs went in there and did their thing. The nurse was about to go in there to hand her meds out is when she saw the patient on the floor. And then we found out from a neighbor that she heard the patient fall but didn't know what was going on. So
board members, it's page 159 that I'm specifically referencing. Well, this is the RN's documentation of the event.
My pages are all, they're serial. Yeah.
So this happened in July.
Correct.
And you were notified when? Roughly. A month ago, 2 months ago? It was probably maybe two months ago.
Correct.
And you're saying that there are people who will corroborate your story.
Well, everything is documented, so whatever.
But you wanted Jack to talk to.
Oh yeah, because I feel there's a person that wrote that was more of a personal thing than anything else. She actually told the director she wrote that more of a personal issue as opposed to me doing anything wrong.
No, I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about the people that you asked him to contact that could agree with your side of the story.
It was someone by the name of Deb.
Deb.
Yeah.
So in the last 2 months, you haven't been able to get a statement from Deb?
I actually told Deb to call Jack, and I had Jack call Deb.
But did that happen? That connection? So yeah. I guess what I'm saying is if I were in your shoes, I would say to Deb or whomever it was, I get that you're busy, but this is my license. I really need your help.
Yeah.
And when she didn't help me, tomorrow I'd be back, and I'd say, I get that you're busy, but this is my license.
Crazy.
I need your
she
help.
Said, she told me she called. She said she I work with her. She said she called and left a voicemail. So I thought that. She left. She called. She told me she called and left a voicemail. I work with her every night. She said she called and left a voicemail. If I didn't know she didn't contact her, I would have made sure that she contacted him. I don't know. She said she told me that she called and left a voicemail.
What's Doug's last name?
I have a phone number, though.
She's an RT?
Yeah. She was one of the four RTs in the month.
I can't identify her with that or phone number. I need her last name. I already have her number. I called her a couple times.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know her last name. But you have a number, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you said she told you that she called
me. Yeah, she called you and left a voicemail. So at that point, I figured that everybody was me, everyone that was being contacted was communicated, and the situation was being resolved.
The conversation never happened, and I know that I tried several times.
So
I think you and I talked about that.
So I do see your documentation of the note that you wrote on July 12th, 2006. My question about when a code occurs, is there a code sheet that is completed? Is the nurse or the RT or somebody responsible for documenting what's occurring during the code?
Good for you. This is, like I said, this is acute to me, and this is the home field. I'm used to hospital scenarios. No, there wasn't a code sheet. People that were in the room were doing their due diligence to save this patient's life. And to be honest with you, it was more respiratory related, more respiratory hands-on than nurses. there wasn't any effie push. There wasn't any mess you would normally have a code being pushed. There's no monitor to see what a patient's heart rate is or what the cardiac output is. It's just strictly respiratory bagging and making sure the patient's airway is fading. So to answer your question, no, there wasn't, to my knowledge, of...
Because the reason I'm asking, because there's documentation from another RT that states day and night respiratory therapist laid eyes on patient at approximately 18:10. The patient was noted to be awake, alert, had greeted the therapist with a smile. The night respiratory therapist re-entered the patient's room at approximately 18:40. While performing their respiratory assessment, the patient was noted to be sitting at 96 with a heart rate of 74, with a cool air solar and FiO2 of 28%, resting in a high Fowler's position. That's at 18:40.
Can I ask a follow-up on the times quick while you're doing it? So how do you guys do your times on the assessments? Are you doing rounds and you're jotting it down on a piece of paper and then you're going back in whatever half hour later and entering an approximate time?
No, what they're doing now, they've changed over to what that point was.
Well, back in July, back when this happened.
That was on paper.
So what happens to the piece of paper after RT enters it into the EVAR?
It gets sent to the department and it gets filed.
So there's paper of this assessment someplace in the
system. Oh yeah. The time, the heart rate, everything is I can. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen any paper.
I've been trying to get. Yeah. I can't go in people's office and go in their desk.
I think we can if we're pushed to that.
Yeah.
And please don't.
No, I would.
Because you'll be here for something completely different.
No, yeah. I'm just trying to get this resolved, and
thank you.
I got best I can do.
Give me one. What time did this patient arrive?
This patient arrived on day shift, and it was a little ambiguity whether or not the patient should be accepted. It was going to be a hospice patient, and they ended up taking the patient even though the patient was considered a hospice patient. And
so this was the first time you had seen this
exactly
patient
that
night? That
day, right.
So 18:40.
Right.
Okay. There is a nurse document. Ms. RN does actually a very nice job in her documentation. In my opinion. Do you mind if I read it?
Nope, not at all.
Around 1935, this writer was about to administer meds to a resident, and the resident was noted to be on the floor in the fetal position when the right side blood was coming out of her ears, still warm but unresponsive and not breathing, and the trach was out. Blood noted also in the resident's bed, called a code and initiated CPR. RT put the trach back in. 911 was called by another staff member. The family/contact on file was also notified. The pulmonary physician, paramedics arrived, performed 4 cycles of CPR, and pronounced the patient at 20:06. The physician and son were notified. Prior to the event, this writer saw the patient around 18:30 during the first round, saw the resident in bed sleeping and not in any distress. The writer requested that the CNA recheck the blood pressure and heart rate related to blood pressure and heart rate around 1,500 hours, 114/79 with a pulse of 92. Metoprolol was given for purposes to make sure it's not low. Vital signs obtained. Resident was also seen by RT at the same time. Resident was not in any distress. No complaints of pain or discomfort. And around 2200, the medical examiner arrived to the building and was given a report. Took the resident's body around 2249 and informed the writer that they didn't see any injuries and would call the son. The writer called the resident's son and informed him that the ME's office had taken the body and will call him tonight. This nurse statement here. RCP Shaw statement and RC, there's another RCP documentation. Not having the code sheet, which doesn't sound like there is one, I can't differentiate if there was a delay in the initiation of CPR. I can't differentiate if there was a delay in the initiation of obtaining an airway. The statement about RCP, the accusation against RCP Shaw that he walked out of a room and stated, oh, well, they're dead, and failed to initiate BLS immediately, seems unsubstantiated by our CP shop, and I have nothing in the documents that clearly states in this nurse's note that CPR was initiated when the patient was found. It's going to be a he said, she said type of story, in my opinion. And I can go off of is what the nurses have documented, what RCP Shaw documented, mm-hmm. and what other RCPs have documented, which seem to substantiate RCP Shaw's statement.
And even the RCP in question, who he feels initiated this, also documented that the patient was found down and there was an airway reestablished.
Correct.
911 was called, continued CPR until paramedics arrived. So even that's charted. No delay.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'm going to motion to dismiss.
So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
We have a motion and a second for dismissal. Any discussion? All in favor of dismissal, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. That motion passes.
Thank you for coming down today.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. We will continue in 3D and call the case of James Gann, case 201-RCE-0030.
Madam Secretary.
You're going to recuse? Okay. Thank you for being here. We have one recusal. Would you raise your right hand, please? You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, RCP Gann, is that, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Gann, yes.
Gann, thank you. Reported two different employment issues on his most recent license renewal application. So these were self-reports to the questions on the renewal application. RCP Gann self-reported a disciplinary action on his renewal application and was submitted to the board on May 18th of 2018. The explanation states that he was written up in June of 2017 for not completing CNO's monthly nursing call light report, which apparently he's been doing for approximately the last 5 years. In addition, he reported a two-part write-up that occurred in March of 2018, where he states, I was accused of leaving a patient or room air for 4 hours, even though another employee had returned the patient to their oxygen in less than 5 minutes. They had told me they had done it, and a charge nurse had heard the conversation. I was never asked from my side of the incident. The nurse manager left a written description. I wrote explaining what had happened out on the write-up paperwork. He goes on to further explain in detail about the patient aspirating a large amount of fluid, et cetera, et cetera. The two-part write-up came shortly after I had complained to our district CNO about my CNO and how 4.5 years of call light reports went missing from my office computer and corporate file over New Year's weekend. This was an isolated incident and report. This was not an isolated incident of this report going missing. It has occurred before and is part of the background for the June 2017 write-up. Corporate offices have been notified about these incidents and some other things, none of which involve the practice of respiratory care. RCP Gann did reply to the allegation within the appropriate time frame. And he provides additional detail regarding his write-ups in his response to the board. I don't have anything further unless there's any questions.
I do have a question for you, too, actually. On the original allegation that you've got typed up, is the first paragraph just a typo in names?
Yes, that's why I said RCP Gann.
Okay. And then later on, there's a cover letter also addressing a different name. I'm trying to find the page. Page numbers for me, I think, are different. Maybe 2880 if you're looking at the whole thing. Never mind. That's from him. Never mind.
Okay.
Forget it. Forget I said that one. Okay.
Any other questions?
Yes, but no. Okay. No. We're good.
I have questions for him, but I'll let him.
Okay.
We're going to give you a moment to tell us what you want to tell us, and then we've got some questions for you.
Okay. It's like I tried to write. The first part of the two write session I got is I come in that morning, had a new patient. The order on my printer said the patient was on 3 liters nasal cannula at night. And I did my rounds, and I went to go back and check on the patient. After I got everything done, he was on his 3 liters. He was 98%. He's telling me that he didn't want to wear his oxygen. He hadn't worn it at his own hospital. So I checked his set. He was 98%. I'm 3 liters. And then I took him off because he wanted his oxygen off. I stood there with the pulse ox on him, let it run for a while. I went through the chart and seen it had been charting back and forth at his other facility. It'd be on 98% on room air. It'd be 98% on 3 liters. So I decided I'd leave him on room air because he said he wanted to. And as I was walking out, I passed our CNA who was coming in. I told her I'd left him on room air and walked out of the room. And I walked out and ran into our nursing supervisor that morning. She was sitting at the desk. She was talking about the patient, and I was telling her that, you know, what I had seen. And shortly afterward, the CNA comes out and said when she did her pulse ox check, his status started dropping, so she put him back on his oxygen. So I, knowing that the CNA was very accurate, very reliable, I left the area and went and finished my rounds. It wasn't until about the next day the nurse even comes up to me and tells me she had a problem with the patient. And then I'm being written up and, you know, like, wait a minute, you know, I totally forgot about, you know, talking to Maria. I don't even know if he asked Maria her side of it. And the other one was another gentleman I was working that day. And I'm in my office working on some kind of report. And the nurse comes in, says the patient just aspirated. He needed a nasal cannula. And he had speech therapist with him. So they leave back to the room. And I'm thinking, well, I better go behind him and see what's going on. I go in the room. The patient's on 6 liters nasal cannula now for the nurse. Sat still, high 70s, low 80s. So I said, this isn't going to do. I go back, get an on-air breather mask, come back, put him on that, get it up high enough low to where it was matching the guy's respiratory rate. It was 40. His sat comes up at 96%, 97%. He's doing good. I turn to the nurse, suggesting it's too early to get an x-ray. Why don't we get some antibiotics started? Because it's obviously, who knew he aspirated. He had swallowed some kind of study the speech therapist was doing. The nurse just stood there. And he was more upset that he had stopped doing his medication rounds than to take care of this patient. So I went to the doctor, and I knew exactly where he was sitting at in our nursing station. Told him what was going on. Patient's rate was 40%. And you're like, okay, let's send him out. He says, the doctor kind of looks at me and says, okay. I go back to the room. As I'm coming in, you know, the nurse is telling me that he had been watching the saturation. He had reached the point of saturation where he wanted it, so he turned the flow down, and the sat automatically dropped again. So he had to turn it back up to get the saturation back up into the 90s. And as I was trying to explain him what the flow rate was at and why, he goes, well, I need to talk to the doctor too, and walks out of the room and doesn't come back. So I'm now looking at this patient, reassessing him. His heart rate, his respiratory rate is now 60. So I tell the CNA, I'm going to go tell the doctor. I go to the doctor. I say, look, his respiratory rate is now 60. He says, okay, we're going to send him out now. And I go back to the room and stay with the patient. And then after it's over with, you know, John comes back in the room. He thanks me for doing a good job. And then in a few days, I'm being told that John said I didn't do anything to help him.
What is the CNO colonate report? What is that?
This is a monthly report that our computer, a separate computerized system that monitors every time a colonate is called. Now, whenever you press a button, the computer records it, pull up a report every day or whenever you want to, so many days, and it lists when and where a colonate is supposed to have been called. I started doing this report in July 2013, at the request of our previous CNO, who also asked me again in August of 2013 to do it, to make sure I was using the correct form that her supervisors wanted to be used, which is which at that time my new student of was a supervisor.
So nothing respiratory related is in this?
Nothing in this has anything to do with respiratory in this report yet, whatsoever. It's just, when they asked me to do it, I felt like, sure, I'll help you out, because the CNO had all these reports he was responsible for and no help, and it wasn't bothering me to do it. And there are multiple times which I have had the report supposedly given to the supervisor, and each time it's been given back to me, and each time it's come back to me, nobody told me.
So you got written up because essentially you didn't want to do this report anymore, correct?
Well, I got written up. It didn't get done. There was like 1 month there where I got busy. I'm the only one in the building, so I have to take care of everything. And I went to do it, too busy to do it. And one night I went to do it, and I couldn't get to it because this computer...
But I guess the point I'm at, it was not patient care related.
It's not correct. Patient care related at all.
Nothing in this report monitors respiratory therapist response to patients?
No.
Okay. And then the second thing that you got written up for, what you explained, was related to the aspiration and placing the patient on a high
right.
flow or a non-rate breather.
Two separate patients. They just decided... combine them together.
Okay. I have no more questions.
Okay. Any other questions, board members? So I have a motion.
I'm going to motion to dismiss. And reason being, based on what I just heard, if I had a patient who the nurse told me this patient had aspirated, I would go to the room, which he did. I would assess the patient, which he did. I would place the patient on a high flow device, which he placed the patient on a non-rate breather and crank the flow up, which I would have done the same thing. He didn't adjust the flow, the nurse did, hence why the stats drop, based on what he just stated. Secondly, regarding the patient who wanted to go on Remair, he stated that he stayed by the patient and reassessed the oxygen saturations after he removed the patient from oxygen that the patient refused to wear. Yeah, I would have expected the oxygen saturations to drop, which sounds like when the CNA went in a few minutes later, the CNA noted that, yep, they dropped. And the patient got put back on oxygen. I don't know that I'm seeing anything wrong.
Patient care related.
I would question about, are we documenting our oxygen on, oxygen off, and so forth, and making sure we're documenting our assessments. But based on what I heard him state,
okay, so we have a motion for dismissal. Do we have a second to that?
The information he provided matches his documentation, and it looks like there's a lot of documentation that he's provided, including complaint letters regarding some of the people involved. And since we don't have any reason to say that the dates don't match, It's consistent with his testimony, so I'll second.
So a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor of dismissal of the case of Mr. Gann, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
Thank you for your time. It's been dismissed. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, can I have 5 minutes available?
We are going to take a 5 minute. It is 10:15, so we'll take a 5 minute quick break. Okay, we are going to go to 3F, consideration and action on investigation of possible unprofessional conduct. And the board will call the case of Lawrence Baker, case 2018-RCE-0065.
And for the board's information, you'll note that the cases in F1 and 2 are located mm-hmm. in two places on the agenda. That's because if you go to your board materials under E and 1 and 2, you'll see a scanned order in there. If you would like to discuss the content of that order, that's confidential, and we would have to go into executive session under A2. If you can have this discussion today without talking about what's in the E section, then you should be fine to do this in public session.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018 RCE 0065. The respondent is Lawrence Baker, holder of license number 10381. RCP Baker was licensed, has been licensed with us since March 15th, 2012. That license is currently set to expire naturally on September 30th of 2019. His last reported employer was Vander Thunderbird Medical Center. He does have a complaint history, and I do not have any current criminal action on the books. Is RCP Baker here? Okay, thank you. This case was initiated because Banner Health reported an involuntary termination to the board on September 27th of 2018. That report states that on September 4th of 2018, Lawrence Baker was exhibiting behavior that caused the respiratory supervisor to have a reasonable suspicion that he was working while under the influence. He was escorted to occupational health where a drug test was administered. He was put on paid administrative leave pending the results of the test. On September 17th, we received the results of the drug screen or the drug test, and they were positive. On September 20th, RCP Baker was terminated from his employment. The board has not received any written communication or response from RCP Baker. I have talked to him on at least one occasion by telephone regarding this incident, which led to the order that's described in under E1. This particular respiratory therapist does have what I would consider prior violation of the same kind, or could be a violation of the same kind and type, in that the board issued him a letter of concern dated March 5th of 2014 for illegal drug use before a pre-employment drug screen. RCP Baker was notified about this meeting both by regular mail and email. It was this week with rather short notice. And you can see the potential violations there. Initial reviews, the board can dismiss a case. They can issue a letter of concern. They can send it to the next level of review, which would be an informal interview, or they can direct staff to enter into any type of or offer any type of consent agreement that might be appropriate in this particular matter.
In 2014, was this patient placed under any probationary orders?
No.
It was just a letter of concern.
Thank you. Thoughts, board members?
Where do I find the consent?
Yeah.
So the consent is under E1.
Any discussion of the consent?
He's not required to appear today, right?
No, they're never required to appear. However, also, if the board feels that this rises to the level of suspension or revocation at this point, you may send it directly to the board.
And he hasn't. License expires on 19.
This license is still good from out here.
Okay, I think I would like to go to roll call. I think I'm going to move to roll call. That's motion. That's my motion.
Well, hold on, because is there currently. I don't know what the current status is of this RCP.
That's an E.
It would be an E1.
I'd like to go into executive session for legal advice.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Oh, okay.
So we've got a withdrawn motion.
Yep.
You're motioning to go into executive session.
For legal advice.
Wait a second for that.
I'll second.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second to go into executive session. Do we have to vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes.
So, members of the audience, executive session is a closed session where the board needs to discuss things that are confidential and get advice from your attorney. So, we're going to excuse ourselves from the room for a couple minutes while we're in executive session, and we'll come back and go back into open session. So, that's what's going to happen.
This is crazy. Okay. Okay, we are going to... should I take the phone call now or stay here?
Let's just do the phone call now, and then we'll come back.
Okay, so I'm going to jump back up, and I'm going to go to 3C, and I'm going to bring her on the phone before I call the case, yes? Good morning, Ms. Johnson. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to go ahead and call the case. My name is Tracy Kagan, and I'm the chair of the board today. And I'm going to call the case for 3C, consideration in action on application interviews. And that is the case of Rondalee Johnson, case 2018-RCE-0069. And Ms. Johnson is on the phone with us today. Can we introduce ourselves? We're going to do a quick introduction. Again, my name is Tracy Kagan, and I'm chair of board.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
Michelle O'Hare-Schattenberg, board member.
Jack Confer, executive director.
Frankie Schneifberg, attorney for the board.
Charlotte Muhammad, assistant.
Kathy Stone, board staff.
Were you able to hear all of that?
Yes, I was, and thank you. Rondalee Johnson. It's great to talk to you, ladies and gentlemen.
Great, thank you for calling in. Okay, Mr. Confer is going to tell us about the case.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an application investigation. We have had one of these for a little while, so I'm going to give you a little background, and I'll get into the details of this particular matter. This is an application for initial licensure. When staff reviewed the application, we found that one of the questions on the initial application was inaccurate, and that being an action had been disclosed to us from the State Board of California for RCP Johnson's background. Basically, staff's position is that she did not disclose that she had disciplinary action that was taken against her California license. Applicant Johnson has been responsive to us as far as responding to that non-disclosure on the application. The original application was received by us on June 22nd, 2018. We received the California license verification on September 17th, and that California license verification disclosed a disciplinary action that had been taken against her license numerous years ago. I don't have anything further. As far as a process matter, I just did not feel comfortable issuing a license to somebody that had a non-disclosure on the application. That's why the board is reviewing this. The board has the ability to approve the application today or direct staff to take a different direction. And if there are other further questions on outcomes, Frankie's available to answer those. I don't have anything further unless you have any questions.
I have a question for you, Jack. Was the only way this was discovered was because she has a California license and you did that, or did this show up on a criminal history as a dismissal, or how did that come about?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Board Member O'Hare Schattenberg, the only way we found out about this was the license verification that is mandatory for our application process. So we didn't find about it with any other disclosure or background check. When California sent us the license verification for current license in California, they disclosed this past action in her licensure history there. After we received that, she's provided an explanation as to why she thought it was expunged from the record, that sort of thing. And the applicant is available to expand on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson, we're going to give you a moment to kind of, he filled us in, but kind of tell us what's going on here, and then the board will likely have some questions for you.
All right. The incident in question happened more than 20 years ago. It was a physical altercation between my husband and myself regarding some personal matters that resulted in some physical violence, both of us. Because he is a sheriff, it was taken up with the department. And I was, I guess, brought in looking at that I had physically attacked a police officer. All charges or anything of that nature were dropped. but I'm an honest person, and when I went to reapply and renew my California license, I put that on my application. Going through everything that I went through with the California board with all of this, I was given a citation and a fine, and everything I thought was done. About 8 months later, I was able to get everything expunged from my record. I did not even think this incident would show up. In the last, 13, 14 years, I've changed hospitals, and they have also looked at my license and never asked anything about this because I didn't think it showed up. It was certainly not my intent to lie to the board in any way. I believe the question to say if my license was ever suspended or revoked, and I checked the box no because it never has been. I've been able to work as a licensed respiratory therapist in the state of California and also in the state of Arizona for the last 30 years. I believe that this incident was no longer, like I said, on my record. I don't believe that I'm a danger to my patients or to the public at all. And I thought I'd take the price for this incident. Again, it was not my intent to defraud. I would have gladly disclosed this had I thought it showed up.
Okay, thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Ms. Johnson?
She doesn't have an Arizona license. This is her initial application, correct?
Correct. Although she's held an Arizona license in the past, correct?
Ms. Johnson, you've held an Arizona license in the past?
Yes, I did.
Do you remember when that was?
It would have been 1988 through 1990 or 91. And then I moved back to California. I believe that I renewed it once when I was still living in California, and then I did not renew it after that.
So somewhere in the early 90s, it would have expired.
Yeah.
Any questions?
California licensing board has renewed her application
multiple times, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Based on her written statement, I feel comfortable making a motion to move forward in approving the license.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion and a second to grant the license. Do we have any further discussion? All in favor of granting the license of Ms. Johnson, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Madam Chair, members of the board, may I ask from the staff perspective that we asked for and received an amended application so that the answer is correct on her application that gets approved. Yes.
Did you hear that, Ms. Johnson?
Yes, I did. And I would be more than happy to do that. In order to do it online, though, there is another fee to be paid. May I do this in writing and mail it back to the board?
Applicant Johnson, absolutely. We're not asking you to pay another fee. I just wanted that particular page that has the incorrect answer, I want to correct and make that part of your permanent licensing file. And
all
staff
right.
Will
how would I go about doing that then for you?
Ms. Johnson, if you go to the board's website under resources, there's a forms section.
Yeah, but staff will send it to you. But we will contact you after this meeting to get that arranged. Is that okay?
Were you able to hear that? That the staff will contact you and they'll send you the form that they want you to fill out.
Oh, wonderful! Thank you so much.
Appreciate your time. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you
for allowing me to appear before you via teleconference. I appreciate that more than you know. Thank you, board.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. We are going to go back to 3F, and the board will call the case of Dale Sandy, case 2018-RCE. -0072.
Is RCT Sandy here? Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2018-RCE-0072 involving Dale Sandy. Dale Sandy has been licensed with the board since March of 1994. License currently set to expire on September 30th of 2019. Let me correct that. His license, I believe, expired, was set to expire on October 12th of 2018. However, since we received the complaint, it's considered administratively suspended until the time that, we adjudicate this complaint. So I just wanted to clarify that. This complaint was opened because we have received a report that RCP Sandy was found slouched over in a wheelchair and hospital staff was unable to wake him. The time of occurrence was approximately 8:30 in the morning while RCP Sandy was supposed to be doing rounds. The case description further states that he was taken down to the emergency department and evaluated by a physician. A variety of tests were done, including a drug screen, which came back positive. RCP Sandy is currently, has a history with this board. He is currently on a non-disciplinary standard of rehabilitation agreement that started back in approximately May of 2018 for a DUI with, I think, with vapor drugs charges that was from earlier or late 2017. I don't have anything further at this particular time unless there's any other questions. This is the initial review of the matter.
Okay. So he is currently on probation.
Correct.
With us.
Correct.
Okay. So we have a compliance. Okay.
We're going to make a motion to move this to a formal.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to go to a formal hearing. Is there any discussion? All in favor of going to a formal hearing for Mr. Sandy, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Okay. Going back through, I don't look like I've missed anyone, right? So we're going to go to 3G, discussion and action on executive director's report.
Look at John J. Go.
Oh, yeah. That was taken off.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the board, I would like to remove that.
Thank you.
Particular case for review. It's we haven't gotten all the records yet.
So 3F3 is being moved.
Thank you.
3G, Jack.
Before I do, can I ask a question of the board as far as schedule before we do that, before I forget? So you just sent two cases to hearing. Those would normally be scheduled for our December meeting. We don't normally, a lot of times we skip December meetings because of holiday schedule and that sort of thing. So, what's that?
I said, I'm okay if they want to push it.
Can we check
December 20th?
Yeah, it would be the third Thursday. Can we check that date to make sure that it's okay with our calendars? And if it's not, can you please let me know as soon as possible? It's just a timing thing. So if we have a December meeting, we may not have a January meeting, but we've been hitting every month. So just take a look at December 20th, please, and let me know.
Okay.
Thank you. Executive Director's report. I gave you a picture of the budget. It's going to be a closed budget year. I think I've said this previously. We're on track right now. Not quite halfway through the fiscal year. Right now, I'm projecting that we're going to have about $1,500 to $2,000 left over at the end of the year. That's a close budget year. So I'm just giving you a heads up on it. Kathy, can you give your license report, please?
Mm-hmm. On our application report for October, we have 96 that are pending. We have 37 that were issued. No fee waivers, no volunteers. Late renewals pending were 3. Late renewals that were approved was 6. Applications that were closed for the 210 days was 5. And people who did not renew their license was 3. As far as our licensing time frame report goes, again, we had a total of 37 that were issued. as far as the time frame for the administrative completeness, it's still one day. Substantive review time frame is still one day with an overall time frame of 2 days. Total number of late licenses issued was 6, with an administrative completeness time frame of 1, a substantive review time frame of 2 days, and your overall time frame, it was 4 days.
It appears that we have our application pending list.
Mm-hmm.
We have applications that we've received in March and April that are still pending. Can you give me an update as to what some of those delays are?
Some of them are usually, without having them exactly right here with me, but most of them are usually because they haven't passed their RRT, is usually the last thing that's remaining, or they turned in their fingerprints really late, like one of the last things, and it takes 30 to 40 days still for those to be processed.
So that was going to kind of be my question. The pending ones are, we're waiting on things from them to come in?
Yeah.
So just a quick reminder. So when somebody files an application, Kathy's talking about time frames. Our time frame, our overall time frame for an initial application is 210 days. So when she's saying that the administrative and substantive are like down to 1 day, we're only taking like 1 to 2 days to process stuff when it comes in. Everything else is a waiting game for us as far as fingerprints and BRC passing the score. And sometimes it's license verifications. We have a couple states that are bad with sending this license verification. So I'm pleased with the turnaround time with the applications. But we do have some stragglers. And then...
how long can their application sit in the status?
210 days. So it's almost 3/4 of a year. And that's why... So when Kathy gives you the stat of closed, it's because they've timed out and they haven't sent us. The other trend that I see, Kathy, pipe in here, is that we have a lot of RTs that apply here as travelers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're ready to come work up on the river or something like that, and then for whatever reason they get an assignment someplace else and they don't even bother following through with the application. So exactly. We never hear closed by application. They just don't.
They just disappear.
Stuff, so.
Thank you.
Let's see. E-licensing update. I've got some half-decent news for e-licensing. We've made some progress. It is half-decent because we're moving forward. We're starting to get a lot of the back-office checklists done that we need to do licensing. And they're starting to come in a little more tied to us as far as it's getting that stuff configured into Salesforce. So we have made steps. My idea is that by December, the 1st of December, we should be up and running with it.
Wow.
That's going to require notices, training in the industry on how to access licenses in a new web-based application. There are going to be growing pains. Board members will hear about it. I'm giving you a heads up that you will hear complaints about there's logging into the system to renew your license. It's now based upon security codes that we're going to send to people to get logged in and registered for their first time. So there are going to be hiccups, but if we work through it now, 5 years, 10 years down the road, I think we are going to be in a better position as well as the state. You know, no matter whether this board is here or it's a consolidated umbrella agency, licensees in the state is going to be in a better position because the system is going to have more bells and whistles, more functionality. Hopefully applicants will be able to log in and say, I'm almost there. I have these two things outstanding. It's not going to happen immediately, but we'll get there. So any questions on that?
Will the licensee get a response back that everything's been verified and your CEUs are good to go? Will there be some two-way communication, or is it just a one-way?
No.
Load my CEUs up and hope for the best.
So one of the major changes that you've heard me talk about is everybody's going to have to enter, when they renew their license, they're going to have to enter in their CE. I got my ACLS on this date from, yes, American Heart. And they put a number. And then they're going to be required to submit scans of those certificates or cards with their renewal application.
Okay.
If it doesn't comply, if we don't have the right 20 hours, they're going to get a deficiency letter that says, nope, your license isn't renewed yet because you don't have your 20 hours of continuing education.
Will that be in the mail or by email?
It can be both. It will most likely be email.
Okay.
That's something that we can decide. But yeah, it's going to be a two-way communication. And hopefully all that will be communicated from the office to every licensee. You know.
Do we have a communication plan on that yet?
No. We don't. I mean, it's going to be like we've done in the past. It's going to be a blast. By email, it's going to be on our website. It will be in the renewal notices that go out to them by email. I don't have any other way, you know, other than, you know, maybe some of the ACRs, SRC.
We're happy to help.
You know, so any word we can get out, it will help.
So I heard you state that the renewal RCP will be required to physically enter, like, the number of hours and what organization, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, are they going to be required to scan their documents in?
Yes.
Upload them to this application as well?
Yes.
Okay.
And only after those have been verified will the license be renewed?
Correct.
So gone are the days of renewing your license at 11:55 p.m. so you can work tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Good.
If you wait to a week before your birthday to renew, you could miss shifts.
Okay.
And not
get. Would you be working on an expired without a license?
Right.
Well, I'm not. We'll see what happens with that.
That's,
I'm not
so
ready.
That number goes down.
Yeah. Hopefully not. So.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. And you're going to get a notice from the board 60 days prior to your renewal.
Yeah.
That
it's
you're up for renewal.
I have hope for it, but. Unfortunately, we're still going to have people that work without a license.
Yep.
We always have that 2-5% that don't renew on time, that sort of thing. It would be great if it stopped, but we'll see. So we're moving forward with e-licensing with Salesforce, so I'm happy about that. It's the first time I've been able to be a little bit upbeat about it. Right, Kathy?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, because it's a lot of training in our institute, so we're working through that. I included some customer service evaluations there to take a look at.
They're all excellent.
Very good.
They're all excellent.
They're not. None of them are for me. It's all Kathy and Charlotte, and I can't understand that. So yeah, we've been doing got some really good feedback there. And thank you, Charlotte and Kathy. I don't have anything else unless there are any other questions.
I have a question. On our last month's board meeting, there was discussion about the evaluation for our executive director.
I haven't
done. And board member Beller, you had mentioned that you were going to share some resources that perhaps.
I had asked.
I'll send it right now.
I had asked Beller, and he graciously said, gave me some of those. I haven't reached out. We could just do a verbal evaluation now.
you probably don't want that.
I can take it.
Just kidding.
So I don't have anything further.
Number five. You have nothing else for G5?
I do not.
Okay. All right, well, that brings us to 3H, which is call to the public. And the call to the public is where you and the audience have the opportunity to address the board should you choose to. You would have 5 minutes to speak about whatever you'd like, but keep in mind that we cannot have conversation with you because it's not been on the agenda. However, you have the opportunity if you would like to do that. Anybody? This is usually the time where we ask you, and we can ask you this, is what you thought of the meeting, what were your takeaways? Don't all like to
talk about this. Oh, come on.
somebody has to have a thought.
And if you respond, I would just ask that you state your name for the record.
That no one's going to respond now. Yeah.
Any name. It doesn't have to actually be your name.
What I would like to hear, and you may be a little shy about asking, being at a board meeting for continuing education, I know you're here for continuing education, I get that, but do you think this process is beneficial? Have you learned something about the board today and our process? I'm just curious. I always ask that. Yes, sir.
My name's Mike. I thought the process was good. It's my first time here. It's kind of interesting to see how things are done. I know a lot of these people probably live pretty far out from the city. So I know the commute kind of gets to a lot of people being at 9, but that's just the reality of it. But you guys cover the whole state of Arizona, right?
Yep, yeah.
You got people who probably come down pretty far that don't want to come to the meeting. So that's something to think about. But, I mean, obviously you can't have different meetings elsewhere, but I thought the meeting was good just to kind of see how things are done, and it's cool to see the formality of it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's a good suggestion, too. Maybe in the future we'll get technologically advanced enough to be able to do some webcasts or something like that in the future for continuing education. We're not there yet. I will tell you one thing that's new. The legislature passed a statute or law that mandates that all regulatory boards post a recording of their meetings on our website. So if you wanted to go to our website because you heard about something or someone, and all the recordings from all of our meetings are posted on our website, so you can actually listen to them if you want to. It's an FYI.
Just to add to that, I have one more, just out of curiosity. I've practiced in different states before. I just wonder how each state comes up with the renewal fees and the initial fees of license applications, and where that number comes from, and why that number increases.
It is a good question. So different states, in Arizona, we have a model. It's called a 90-10 model, which means 90%, we're self-funding agency. And when I say an agency, I'm talking about board staff. We have 4 FTEs, of which 3 positions are filled. And then you have the board and various other contracts to run an agency. So all of those fees are self-generated. 100% of what you see here is from renewal fees and application fees. The 90-10 is not. We keep 90% of our money to run this agency. 10% of it goes to the state general fund. So if you think about your renewal fee, $150, 90%, $15 goes to the state that they use for other stuff. All the rest of it comes here to license, regulate, respiratory industry. On top of that, the other part of the question was, how do we set those fees? Well, how much does it cost to run an agency? Our appropriation, our annual spend, is about $320,000, and that includes salaries, ERE, which is employee-related expenses, that's insurance, that's all the kind of stuff that goes along with employment. The rest of that money is used for accounting, new software programs, that sort of thing. And for Arizona, we just recently had a fee increase in renewal fees. We went from $120 every 2 years, which is basically $60 a year, to $150 every 2 years, $75 a year. The large majority of that was to finance a new computer system, which you heard me talk about that's coming up in the future. With the end in mind, that was to give you more control over your licensing. For example, instead of calling staff to get a copy of your vault card, you'll be able to go into the computer system and go, oh, there's my vault card. You print it out on the spot. So some of those efficiencies, the technology is going to allow us to pass that on to some of you. The $320,000, we annually, so what we bring in for a year is about $320,000 a year. So we're basically a push. What we're bringing in with your licensing fees is what we're spending to run the agency, conduct investigations, issue licenses, that sort of thing. As far as increases, other increases, how it's originally established, with that 9-10 model, it's self-funding. So you are funding your regulatory board in all of its functions here in Arizona. Other states have different umbrellas. There's some states have an 80-20 split. Some states it's a general fund, which means that the taxes you pay the Department of Revenue fund all the health-related regulatory boards. That's other states. Here it's 90-10. You're paying for your regulatory board, staff salaries, that sort of thing. So hopefully that helps a little bit.
That's good.
Also to add on, your fees are actually set by the legislature, not by the board itself. They can't decide next month that they want to raise the rates and automatically make them start paying more. Everything has to be run by a bill in the legislature. So I think in rare cases, when the boards are bringing in more money than they need to operate, they've actually lowered fees in the past. Most boards have not had a fee increase in maybe over a decade, because usually when it goes in front of the legislature, you have to justify that we haven't raised in 10, 20, 30 years, we can't operate on this model, maybe only through the next year, year and a half, or we're going to go into debt, and that's when they get increased. But there's always a public comment period. You can speak to it.
Including this board. This board hasn't had a fee raise in...
No, this last renewal fee was the first one in at least... How long was it?
10 years.
I'd say more than that.
Yeah.
It had been a really long time.
For 20 years. And it's been always 120.
The state legislators, not only in Arizona, but other states, if any particular agency in Arizona has a cash fund, a cash balance, just like a checking book, if you have too much... Guess what? When you have an economic downturn, where does the legislature and the executive office look for money? They look at the agencies that are self-funding. So a bunch of agencies that had large cash balances in Arizona over the last 10 years got money swept away from them, health-related. So the fees that they're paying in the regulatory board was taken away from that board and used for other things. A lot of people look at that as double taxation. No, not as an entity as the state of Arizona. We were lucky where we haven't had that happen on a large scale. We had a little money swept about 6-7 years ago, but as long as we maintain, you're not going to lose more of that money to the state general fund. It would be really nice with the new computer system to maybe reduce your fees in the future. It has the ability to replace people. It's a reality. I see it? Probably not. But someday there might be a consolidation of resources because the computer systems are so efficient for licensing. Maybe hope 5 years, 10 years. It'll happen eventually. I don't know what the time frame is.
Just so you know, too, the board doesn't get paid. We're all volunteers.
We're all volunteers.
What else? Anything else?
Any other comments out there?
I have one. My name's Dave, and I think the board members, and it's fair and honest, and I appreciate what I produced here today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, well, I'm just going to... So I just have one request for everybody. Just remember, as healthcare professionals, it's a license. It's a privilege, not a right. We don't want to see you here responding to a complaint. Nobody wants that. But if you have a statute that mandates that any licensee report something that could be a violation to us within 10 days... That is a mandate in our statute. So I don't necessarily care how you do that, but if you see something going on out there that you think might end up in a bad patient outcome or somebody get hurt, please let us know. Okay? We don't want that to happen. I'm sure we don't want that to happen either. Thank you.
So I set up the highlighting information form so everybody has an email. I also use the BCC feature because it's good practice so that way somebody doesn't inadvertently hit reply all and create form. So it's out there.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to 3I, which is items to be placed on future agenda. Does anyone have anything for that?
That might be the evaluation.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect. Then we are adjourned at 11:13.
Tracy.
Oh.
And Kathy's going to call your name. Don't leave.
Hang on a second. We've got a new roll call for CE.
Okay, give me a hey or stick your hand up so I know you're still here. Sheila. Jeff. Ernesto. Whoever, Malinovic. I can do the thank you. Crystal. Paula. Barry. James.
That's, he was on the
agenda. Yeah. Yeah,
he was on the agenda.
You and me both.
Alexis? Wilshawn? Thank you. Tina? Jessica? Rondolin? Louis? Kimberly?
Oh, well, there's two of them.
Kimberly Stewart. Michael? Arturo? Salvador? Sylvie? Okay. Katerina? She was on the agenda.
Yeah.
David? Henry? Daniel? Run tip? And the other, Kimberly Keith. Okay, just so you all know that your certificates will come out to you probably within the next week. So if you don't receive one, please let us know. But otherwise, we'll be giving those out to you, okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't forget your microphone, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So what time did you miss it? So 11:16?
Thank you, everybody.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.